This is a Web Canopy Studio production.
What's up, guys? It's Tim. We have a great guest for you today, Paul Biznasty Bissonnette. Now, obviously, you guys know Paul. He's a funny guy. But what John and I were mostly interested in was to see what's he like behind the scenes, how did he get to where he is, and where is he going next? What's in the future for Paul Bissonnette? So really good conversation, really some open, honest answers from him and some candid discussion on some hot topics. So without further ado, here's Paul Bissonnette.
We're just going to get into it. Paul Bissonnette's joining us. Paul, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. After a nice little hike, got outside. Fresh air seems to be a good recipe for success these days.
Are you in Arizona?
I am. Yeah, I've been. It's a pretty good place to get stuck during all this. Right beforehand, I was in Miami, Florida, with my girlfriend who currently lives in Gainesville. She's going to move here, but of course, with everything that's going down, it's been delayed and. How are you guys making out during all this?
My life hasn't changed too much. You know me. I just have my kids. We homeschool most of them, so it's not that much of a big transition. It's just the getting of food and the getting of things kind of put a little issue for us. But other than that, it hasn't changed too much.
I would say of anything, this is going to, moving forward after this is all over, I think we're going to start appreciating a lot more. As human beings. And the reason I say that is just even simple things like going to a sporting event. And I mean, of course, you know, healthcare has been backed up because of this. Maybe we'll concentrate more dollars and allocate more money towards that. I mean, even education, as far as like, you know, you know, where these kids are going to school and a lot of things you don't even consider when this happens. You know, a lot of kids, especially in the United States, some of their best, if not only meals of the day are coming while they're at school.
Yeah.
So it's tough times for this economy. And, you know, as time goes on, I mean, the level of guilt that, you know, we've been very fortunate, right? We've, you know, we played in the NHL. We were able to save up a few bucks, but there's a lot of people who are hurting right now. So it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's hard to think of any positives in the moment, but going forward, I think we're going to be all right.
So what were you doing? We've been trying to work out this interview for a few days. You were doing a player relief fund.
Yeah.
Said your work. What's that all about? I don't know if you can talk about it yet, but.
Honest to God, I was just scrolling on Twitter when all this started picking up steam, trying to gather as much information as possible. And of course, there was a little bit of a delay on the AHL and NHL side of things based on, you know, of course, the fact that they can keep these teams afloat for, you know, they could probably last a year doing what's happening right now. But ECHL made the wise decision right away. They're like, we need to shut up shop because, you know, the amount of money that they would have been paying in rent for the players would have been eaten away. Then, of course, refunding tickets and then paying the players as well. Some of these teams would have had to fold. Now, some of them are probably in decent situations and they probably could afford to pay the players. We don't need to go there. But when I saw that and right away that they wouldn't be being paid, I said, you know, maybe as a podcast, we could step up and do something. So I started reaching out to brands in order to try to get this ECHL player relief fund going. And I think that we are going to execute 6 brands where we roll out these YouTube videos of interviews we've already done. And each brand is going to throw in $10,000 into this player relief fund. Now, there's a few brands that might allocate the money to different people in need, one being like, you know, first responders in the medical field, which I'm sure the players have no problem with. But after doing a t-shirt and a GoFundMe, I would hope that our podcast would be able to raise, and thanks to Barstool and all the people behind the scenes making this work, Erica Nardini, our CEO, and of course, Can I Brand sponsor. We got Boyke's, Tim Stapleton's company jumping on board, and then a few other big players. And, you know, just to, if we can get $100,000 for these guys, along with the ECHL player relief fund on their end, which is going to be, I believe, $200,000, and then maybe even the owner stepping up and putting a little pool together, I think we can get close to what these guys would have been paid, and they will get 100% of their salaries reimbursed.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't understand when you're in the coast, you're not making any money at all. I think they make $25,000 a year. Usually they get their house paid for.
Some of them, it's even less than that. Like some guys are making like 18 grand, like yeah, after taxes, right? So some of the players have actually stood up and said, hey, listen, I come from money or I'll be okay. Either make sure those other guys get paid first and or forfeit my money and just give it to the players who have families and who are maybe a little bit older or some guys who are up to their neck in student loans. So we're going to try to help out that small area. And then once we do that, if this thing keeps going, we're going to try to help out more and more. So we're in a position where we can do so. And you know, all of our fans who end up, you know, putting money into the GoFundMe or buying merchandise in order to get proceeds going to these guys. Even New Amsterdam stepped up and they helped out the Bartenders Guild.
Oh, that's which, nice. Yeah.
So they actually purchased the shirts as well. So 100% of everything goes right to the Bartenders Guild. And I think we've sold over 4,500 shirts so far. So that's great. That's
unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cool. That's so cool, man. Good for you. See, he's not just a pretty face, you guys. He's actually doing good work.
Well, this, once again, this is people behind the scenes doing all the work, like your boy Tim here, how you just kind of show up with your pretty face and he's cutting all the clips and making this thing grow on social media instead of homeschooling his 10 kids.
Well, I can't do everything. I have another one on the way, by the way. We have another one on the way. So life is good at the Scott household. What can I say?
You're trying to start your own team.
Yes, I am. All and girls team, though.
Correct. Now, have you gotten wind on what the next one's going to be?
No, we always play a surprise game. So we wait until the day she's born. I'm just assuming it's going to be a girl.
Tim, are you also helping out with the Catholic podcast, the Christian podcast, excuse me?
Yeah, no, not much. It's run through the same office, but I don't really play a hand in that one too much.
Tim is a good Catholic boy, though.
I was intrigued to hear that you were starting that. Good for you. And I know at the – where were we at the ball hockey tournament? Scotiabank?
Scotiabank, yeah.
It was the ball hockey to support cancer. And you were talking about all this and you're enjoying it?
I am. You know, faith's a big part of my life. We take it serious in this household. And it's just another kind of part of me. I feel like I have two parts of me. One's hockey, one's my faith. And it's just another avenue for me to kind of talk about my life. I love talking. So that's what we do. And it's going okay. It's not as, you know, popular as the hockey one. But I dig it a little bit more than the hockey one sometimes.
Do you find that playing the game the way you did made you at one point more reactional, even in real life situations? And is that part of the reason that you've gotten stronger in your faith, where you're giving things a lot more thought before you react to them?
What a tough question. I don't think I am pretty reactive. I don't think that has anything to do with my faith side. That was kind of pushed by my wife, to be honest with you. Before I met her, I was completely not faithful whatsoever. I didn't go to church. I didn't know what a church was. So that just happened throughout my career, really. But no, I don't know. I'm still pretty reactful. Even with my kids, they do something, I like snap.
For somebody who's not very religious, like I don't practice it a lot. I do believe in God. What's the one benefit that you've gotten from it, like your own benefit from becoming more involved with your faith?
I think I'm not as self-centered as I used to be. I know there's a greater purpose and it's not just me. So whenever I come to a situation, I used to think, how can this benefit me? How can I take advantage of this? How can I make this work for me? But now I come into it, I go, well, how can I make this work for everyone else? How can I help my wife out? How can I help my family out? I'm definitely living for other people now.
Is that a lot more fulfilling when you finally start acting on it?
I feel like I'm on the hot seat here. But yeah, no, it is. It honestly is. I know
I'm trying to learn as much as you are right here. I know I kind of flipped the switch on you asking you all the questions, but I was genuinely intrigued when you did start it, and congratulations that you've been executing it.
Tim, or Biz, we got to sit down. I'm going to convert you. I tell you what, if you believe in God, that's the first step.
Okay, and the reason I asked you is because when I was playing with Shane Doan, he was extremely into his faith, obviously still is, and he would do these little group sessions, and sometimes I would join, and it was just very interesting to see how he would perceive it and how other people would perceive the Bible and what how he interpreted it, and we would talk about it. I was always interested in it. I never really got highly involved, but as I said, I do believe in God. And hey, maybe when I start popping out kids, things will change to even another level.
Your priorities change when you start having to take care of other people and realize, well, maybe, you know what? They got to take the right path here to get to heaven one day. So it's a big responsibility. I love that, Biz. I love that. So, Biz, I had a couple questions for you. And they're not the usual hockey ones. I'm fascinated with how you got to where you are right now, because you came up the same way I did. You played, you know, in the AHL for a while. You were in and out of the hockey world, like NHL lineup, for how many years did you play in the show?
I was there about five and a half.
I played
about a half a year up with Pittsburgh the year they won the Stanley Cup. I was, of course, not there for the run, but I was waiting for the ring in the mailbox. I never got it, but
still waiting.
Technically a member. If I was playing baseball, I would have got a ring.
They gave one to Thorburn for St. Louis. Did you see that? He never played a game the whole season. And then they give him a ring, and he's carrying around the cup at center ice. Like,
now I'm a big Thorburn fan, and I was actually excited for him. So he was my captain with the Saginaw Spirit. Played with him my first year. Funny. Played in Saginaw, and my first year in the OHL was in Thunder Bay.
Really?
Oh, Jesus, people are going to scold me. North Bay, excuse me. Taylor Pyatt's from Thunder Bay. North Bay Centennials. And I played there as a 16-year-old. And they actually got a team back there after the Brampton Battalion moved back after they gassed the city. Or they gassed this.
They gassed the whole city.
They gassed the team and sent them to Saginaw. They sold them. They sold out.
And Saginaw's not doing very well. I think they might even lost their team too. I can't remember.
No, they're doing great. You're talking about city. Flint. Come on, watch your mouth. Saginaw Spirit are rolling right now.
I drive through Saginaw every time I go to Toronto or Detroit, and I just hold my breath when I drive through Saginaw. That's the motto. Hold your breath when you drive through Saginaw.
Shots fired, buddy.
But anyways, well, so I'm just – when your career was ending, when you were wrapping it up, did you have any idea how you were going to transition? Was this in the game plan, or did this all just kind of happen?
The podcast is always something I wanted to do. I was just very scared to get involved and not be myself, because I knew if I ever did join a podcast that I would handle it the way I've handled it. And coming out of my career, I'd signed with the Coyotes for a year, and that was my stability. I was very happy that I'd gotten a job right out of playing with an NHL organization. And although I was happy that I got that, I was a little bit scared too, because I knew I was never one to just kind of fall in line. I wanted to do my own thing. I like being my own boss. So I told Witt, I said, let me get my feet wet here, see what I got, and then I'll think about joining the podcast. Because I'd already been on a couple times, and there was obviously a big reaction, and they hadn't really developed a big Canadian fan base yet. And I could have brought them that based on my social numbers. And I was willing to let it fly. So the first thing I actually got done out of playing after I'd signed that year contract with the Arizona Coyotes was I did that film project called Biz Does BC. Yeah. And it was a very silly project. Barstool ended up purchasing it. And you could tell as it goes on, my acting gets a little bit better. Now, when I say better, that doesn't mean it's good.
Let me cut you off.
Go ahead.
So when you do that, the Biz Does BC, you just do that on your own, hoping that someone picks it up. So you just say one day, I'm going to do this video, and I'm going to shop around.
I wanted to see what else I could do. I hadn't been really in front of the camera like that yet, and I kind of saw it going in the way of content, right? Whereas if you're able to be in front of the camera, why do I need Sportsnet? Why do I need the Coyotes? I got enough people following me. I got just as many people following me as their main account. So why wouldn't I just go monetize it on my own and then not have to say it the way that they want me to say it? That was a big issue for me. I don't like being told what to say. And obviously it's gotten to a level with Spit and Chicklets, and they're through Barstool, and I never hear from them. They've never called me one time about something I've said, because they understand that I believe I know that line. I'm not racist. I'm not sexist. I may talk about things that you don't find funny or find, you know, not appropriate, but at the end of the day, I don't think I'm crossing that line. And I don't think I'm a bad person. So I'm able to still get to that line, one of which a lot of people out there still enjoy. But because these major networks work with these brands and they got to worry about these people bitching at them, they're constantly moving the needle. So it's hard to, like, I might do a video with the Coyotes and four or five of the bits might get cut out of it by the end. And I'm like, come on. I'm looking like here, because we can't push the envelope because you're worried about hearing from them. It's just like, why do I even bother? So it gives me a lot. And even like being on the being on Fox before pre and post game with the Coyotes, I get nervous because I have a feeling that one of these days I'm just going to slip out and say something wrong. So before I go on air with those guys, my anxiety is through the roof. So
yeah,
the reason why I told them to wait is because I wanted to see how the Coyotes thing went. It went good. I started pushing content. They saw it was for real. People ended up seeing the film project and were like, oh shit, that wasn't bad for a dude who just picked up and kind of did all that himself with his buddy Pasha and with the help of sound guy and of course the characters you see along the way. And I was able to get, I think, 18 NHL guys to act in it, not knowing what the fuck it was. So people might have watched it and been like, that was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. But it gave me the ability to know how to work things behind the camera, organize things where I can have my own team, where if the NHL wants to hire me, I'm comfortable with the people I'm working with. They stroke the big check and they don't have to worry about all the.
Yeah.
So it's nice. And it taught me a lot of these different things. And that's what's helped me not only jump on Chicklets once I got established, but also take that to different avenues. Like Wit is the star of the show to me.
So Ray does it. Are you on every episode?
Ryan.
Oh, he does that on purpose.
No, I don't. Hey, watch the language, Paul. You're killing
it. Okay, listen, I have to watch my language, but you just took a shot at Ryan Whitney.
That is totally sincere. I apologize to Ryan. I've never met him. That's why that happened.
Tim, you're on my side. He was pulling my chain there, correct?
No, he doesn't mean to do it. He did it with that video last year too.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair
enough. I do it all the time. When we talk in the office all the time, I say Ray all the time and he corrects me. I'm just really bad. So, here's my question.
I kind of went on a rant there, but there's a lot of different things. That's kind of like all these different weird avenues that have brought it to where it is now, where I'm having a good time. It's something new. It's a wave, and this thing might not be cool anymore in 3 years. And then I'll go to do something else that I maybe haven't done and want to try. So it's just I'm just having fun and trying things out.
And you work with the NHL. You work with the Arizona Coyotes. Doing stuff with major brands. Did they ever say, like, it's just amazing to me that you can do the content with the Chicklets and the NHL still wants to partner with you?
Yeah. I've heard a few teams, I believe, people complain about it. People don't want me getting checks from the NHL based on what I've said on the podcast. The NHL knows, the Coyotes know that I love all the people there. They are awesome. I've really enjoyed working with them up until this point. I am just being myself. And if that's hurting their brand and they can't work with me anymore because of it, I take no offense to it. And I would say, hey, thank you for all the opportunities I've been given through you guys. I understand why you have to go in this direction. I get it, but I want to stay true to myself. And I get to do the podcast, which is the number one thing above anything else that I love doing. Like, nothing's even a close second. Growing that and doing that is my, like, I'm proud. I get up every morning trying to make it better and opening up different avenues and making the consumer's experience better. It's a lot, man. It's like I work 80-hour weeks. It's a grind.
You do a lot of stuff. Now, here is a very serious question, and I'm not meaning this as a dig in any way. You are at such a high profile. You are the most viewed person, arguably, in all of hockey, right? Do you ever, as a role model, take that into account? Like, you're influencing so many young kids. Does that ever come
100%
when you're doing these stories and stuff? Do you ever stop and think, well, maybe I should not say that? Is there anything you pull back? Like, you say, you just let it all loose.
Okay. Well, first of all, I appreciate the compliment. I just think that, like, with the podcast, like, being as big as it has and, like, us willing to put ourselves out there, it has gone to a big level, and I'm very appreciative for that. And with that comes influence, and I completely agree where you're coming from. I'm not going to bring my level of influence and tardiness to a level of where, like, it's not me. I respect somebody like, you're a prime example. The fact that you won't even swear because you're concerned about how it may be viewed and how that's affecting others. And dude, I commend you for being walking that fine of a line and being that good of a citizen. It would be exhausting to me, and it wouldn't be being myself. And once again, it goes back to, I don't feel that I'm really causing any harm. And where I can show my examples is, like, with the ECHL Player Relief Fund. Like, I can make jokes and joke around and be me and talk about drug use. And like, that's me. That's my experience. I'm not condoning any of that. That's the way I've decided to drive my own bus. I like doing a little bit of everything. Okay, what's over here? Poking my head in. All right, cool. That was different. Maybe not on an all the time thing. You know, like I've done it all.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's just such a, you literally cover all the spectrums, every single one. You're touching there. You're like, you're doing great things with kids. Then you're doing this over there with your, that, like, it's just amazing. Like, you would never think at the end of the day that you'd be setting up a relief fund for players, or you'd be doing this kind of charity. You do charity events all the time, you know? And then it's cool to see. I just was wondering if that's a conscious thing you think about, or.
Yeah. I feel like I have to, like, those are the things where I have to show it now. And it's like, do I, like, you know, not only, it's like the time, right? Now it's like, I got to add another, I have to add 15 hours to my week in order to line up phone calls and talk to this sponsor here, talk to that. Can you come in, man? Like, it's a good cause, you know? And then some of the brands are like, yes, we're going to give 10% of our proceeds to that same fund too, on top of that. And it's like, you know, you got to organize all this. And the, you know, working with the ECHL has been awesome, working with Barstool, and all these people behind the scenes have came forward in order to help these guys out. And yes, it I feel like I have to do it at this point. The game has given me enough where I can't just say, not my problem. So that's where I'm at. So yes, I'll add the 15 or 10 or whatever hours moving forward to my plate, and so will those other people, in order to do some good.
You're a fascinating guy, Paul. You're a fascinating, fascinating guy. So what's next? Like, you're killing it in the podcast. You're all over. You're really making a difference in that world. Like, what are you – what's next? Like, have you thought that far?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're trying to shift our focus to women's hockey. So there's another way, okay? Witt said it best. He goes, I might have a daughter one day, and she needs role models to look up to in order to look at someone and say, I want to be that, aspire to, right? So I would say enough of our demographic might not be interested in women's hockey. But we're asking, hey, listen, give it a fair shake. These women are getting better. They're honing their skills. There's better development for them. And it's getting f-ing competitive. Pardon my French.
No, this is good hockey. Sorry. Yeah.
It's great hockey. So we want to direct a number of our followers who are down to give it a chance, who may not have before. Hey, look, get the eyes on this here. So, and we also want to drive more traffic to them, and hopefully, you know, one day help direct more traffic to a league that's more sustainable, where they can get paid a decent salary for what their skills are, because they're going to be world-class athletes, right? I would say that a female world-class athlete should at least be making around 80 to 90 grand a year.
And then, of course,
you know, I mean, they need a decent living. And then, of course, the better ones get better sponsorship, because they're the stars, and they fuel the machine, just as if though in the NHL. That's what I'm trying. That's another avenue that I'd like to help out. Whereas some of our following might be like, enough with this, where it's like, no, fuck you. We have the platform. It's our call. Shut up. Fast forward if you don't want to listen to it.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on. Or let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack. All open 24 hours a day and all online, including their $750,000 poker series. If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the weather. Visit their website and join today to receive a 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE. That's BLUEWIRE. Bet online, your online wagering experts.
Tim, you gonna pipe in, or you got anything?
Yeah, Biz, I want to ask you kind of a hockey-related question, if that's okay, if we can bring it back to the
your career. Yeah, no worries. I ramble a lot, boys. Sorry.
Yeah, it's good. So you had that stint with the Monarchs, and I want to ask you, first of all, I went to school in Manchester. I went to St. Anselm College. You might have practiced at that barn a couple of times. A lot of the Monarchs teams came through there. And before I talk about the team, like, what did you think of the city? Did you like it there? Did you guys go out? Did you have your favorite spots there?
I was towards the end of my career, so I'd been going out to bars in Scottsdale, Arizona. So Manchester just, you know, wasn't really doing it for me. It's a little gloomy, and, you know, we had a pretty good team that year, and we, you know, we didn't lose many games. So I think we wanted to give it a fair shake going in. Obviously, some of the younger guys, like every Sunday or Saturday, if that was the last game of the week, would floor it. Now, there wasn't too many bar options. I will say the one bar, I forget the name, it's not coming to me. Well, one of the weekends, we were on the road, and somebody was stabbed there. So it's like, boys, like we just lost our main hangout. I would tighten up the ship. We'll start doing house parties and stuff. But, you know, overall, the city was great. You know, it was a great experience winning a Calder Cup there. And the biggest takeaway from it was just a group of guys. We had such a fun team. We didn't lose many games. And John, you know, when you're on a team where I think we lost 10 regular season games, and then we ended up losing 3 in playoffs, and 2 of which were in the first round. We went to game 5 in the first round. We almost lost out. We were up 3-0 in the first period. You know, we were up 2-0 in the series. We gave up 2 more games to them. We're like, oh my God, all of a sudden we're in an elimination game here, and we were steamrolling everyone all year. Up 3-0 in the first, second period, they score 3 to tie it. So luckily we ended up pulling one off, getting past that. We didn't lose another game till the finals, and we steamrolled Utica 5-1. So
what was your ice time? What did you get in the A? Did you play quite a bit?
I was playing like 5-6, maybe some night 8. But I could not keep up anymore. These guys were flying. That was the time when all of a sudden you had to be a really good skater. There was no more, hey, now, you didn't skate well, you probably were not going to make it.
Do you think people like overlooked the level of talent the players in the AHL have? And is there like, you know, is there kind of a misconception of how impressive it is to win that cup?
What's crazy to me is how many of them refuse to maybe take on a few other bits of the role in order to get to the next level. Like they've all been these skill guys their whole life who have all these skills and they can move fast. And most of them are big now too. I mean, I know little guys get chances, but I mean, there's these 6'1", 6'2 guys are moving around like that. So it's like, okay, you can't be in a top 6 role. Learn how to penalty kill. Be willing to get in front of shots. Be a little bit more physical. Maybe get a little bit more yappy and be willing to shed your mitts. And to be that guy nowadays, if you fight like 7 times a year, they're like, oh, this guy's willing to step up for his teammates. So it's not even that hard of a task. Where, I mean, John, you could attest to this. Before, if you wanted to do it, you had to be like Dorsett.
Yeah.
That guy in the American League was probably .180 and was scrapping heavies every night. And he was starting to chip in offensively. In order to get to the next level, he had to add killing penalties, having a chip on his shoulder, being in everyone's face, and eating punches from heavies for 30 games a year.
Yeah, and Brandon Frost, there's a few guys who did Prusty, that. Brandon Frost did that for a while.
Prusty was a lightweight, and he had to fight all the big boys.
That's the thing I say to all these kids. I'm like, the guys I played with on the third and fourth line, in juniors they put up 50 goals. They were the best players on their junior team. And they realized they weren't going to make it in the first line, and they just transitioned their game. Then you go to the AHL, those guys scored 50 goals in juniors. They just don't want to do it. They don't have it in them. They don't have it. The guts or the drive to be like, I'm going to jump.
And we are also getting to that level of, I don't want to say entitlement, but it's a lot softer nowadays than it used to be.
Yeah.
So even in the American League, this would have been hammered into them where they would be like, hey, and they would always, I find even still the good teams is they draft to what they're going to mold that player into. A majority of these teams now, they kind of just throw it at the wall and hopefully it sticks. Whereas if you gotta be able to see something and say, hey, I think this guy is going to be a good third line center. He does it well enough and he can add enough offense at that level. He's got a good brain on him. I think we got a third line center here. Whereas
Well, it drives me nuts,
So it's a lot of teams throwing the wall and hoping it sticks. But that's also kind of the way the game's going a little bit too now, where these guys, even when they get to the American League, most of them just go right to the NHL now and get power play and all this. When we were playing in the American League, even if you were a skilled guy, when you got to the A, you'd be on like the third or fourth line and you wouldn't get special teams. It didn't matter. You had to earn that ice time. And I think that a nice mixture of both is a good little concoction.
Well, when I was in the A, when I got sent down at the end of my career, it was frustrating to see these guys with these unbelievable hands. They were just all world talents, first round guys. I'm just like, man, you could be so good if you just only knew what you had to do. And I would sit them down and like, listen, if you want to play in the NHL, you got to do this, this, and this. And they couldn't do it. They would not lower themselves to that point. They said, no, if I go, I'm going to be on the power play. I'm going to be doing this first line. They couldn't, they couldn't get it through their head to be like, no. And now they're in the A. There was a few guys in, in St. John's were like that.
The reason I said accountability too is it's very easy, and you see it quite often, is it's the coach. And it's just like, okay, well, you're on your fourth team. Like, I don't know. Is it the coach?
It's not the coach. It's you. It's your mentality. That's kids these days, though.
Some theories have proven wrong, though. I mean, a good example of that is Anthony Duclair this year.
Dookie,
I would have said this. I would have gotten to the point where I would have been like, damn, like I know he's a good dude. The guys on every team that he plays for like him. He's an awesome guy in the locker room. No attitude issues. I would have gotten to the point saying, I don't know, maybe he needs to adjust his game to fit more of that bottom six role. And maybe he needs to play with a little bit of an edge if he wants to stick around. But he finally got to Ottawa. He was given that confidence by DJ Smith. Is that how you say his name?
DJ Smith?
Is DJ Smith the head coach there?
No clue.
I believe it's DJ Smith. He was the coach for the Oshawa Generals. And he kind of just let him have the reins. And he said, yo, go prove him wrong. And he has. He ended up being an all-star this year. He did slow down a little bit in the second half. But nonetheless, man, 22 goal season, I believe, when things
got. Yeah, I played with him his first year in Arizona. Him and Domi were tearing it up. And he had a ton of confidence. They were on the power play. They did. Oh, the coach just said, tips just said, go and fly.
Yeah. It was weird how the decline happened fast here for Max Domi. I'm confident when I say that sometimes a player definitely is a lot better in a different environment. And the reason I say that is Max Domi came playing from London, Ontario. So every night, and I believe that there's a sense of showmanship, just like his old man with Max, where he likes playing in front of a full building. And I don't think that at the time when he was playing here and the team wasn't making playoffs and they weren't as competitive, I don't think the atmosphere got his juices flowing enough. And he did have an off year, and he was accountable about that. And then we were like, you know what? I think that he would have a better chance in a different environment. Shipped off to Montreal, had a great following season. And then, of course, the Galchenyuk thing didn't necessarily work out here. So sometimes I'm a firm believer, though, and some people are just better off in different environments. So going back to the theory on, if you change one team, it might work out. When you start changing three and four and it still hasn't worked out, it's harder for me, even as a player guy, to give you benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's the player at that point. You can only give an old dog, whatever. I don't even have an adage for that.
Were you stubborn about when they kept switching you around, or were you just grateful to be at the NHL level?
That's why I stayed in the league for so long. I did not grumble at all. I just kind of, you want me at forward, I'll play forward. I'll play D today. You want me, to be bag skating here, not playing there, do whatever I want. That's the role we had. I play with so many guys on the fourth line. They're complaining, this and that. They didn't last long.
No.
They were out of the league so fast.
Okay, here's a question for you. Would it ever get to you at least a little bit when you would go 10 games in a row being a health bomb?
Well, yeah. Like, I would have conversations with the coach. I'd break my stick over the bench. I got kicked off the ice in practice by Teddy Nolan one time. Like,
Come on. It happened.
Yeah, like, it happens a lot where it happens. But then, I compose myself and I go and apologize.
Okay, so that's why I asked you at the start of the episode. If you were more into your faith back then, you think you snapped that stick over the bench and yell at Teddy Nolan?
No, I don't think so. I think, you never know. I think hockey was my job. I was so upset. We were playing gosh, who were we going to play that night?
Were you swearing back then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you've been able to cut the swear words out of your vocabulary.
Yeah, I didn't.
Not
I didn't
recording.
No, Rory. Well, no, and I don't swear when we're not recording. I try not to swear all the time, just because that's what I believe in. But I wasn't a Catholic back then. I was just starting to learn the faith a little bit, so I was just getting in doctrine and kind of what was going on. So I was still
going back to your conversation earlier, though, and I didn't feel it as like something you're like trying to push on me about setting a better example. I do believe, though, as time goes on, my inside needle will move, just because you start realizing what's more important. I'm just not there yet, and I hope that if anyone's offended by what I'm doing now, maybe one day I'll eventually come around. But it ain't happening now, because that's who I am at this moment.
And that's, you know, everybody's got a different journey, and I'm one to attest to that. I had a rough patch too growing up, and I have just, the kids were a big thing. It's like, I don't want my kids seeing me or hearing me doing this. Everything lives on forever in the internet, right? And so I don't want them pulling something up. They probably can already, but just trying to leave my mark.
Tim, that's why I like hanging out with people who have different opinions than me, because I like to push on people's ideas, and I like them to push back. You don't want to hang around people that are just yes men constantly. I gotta understand, like, why do you think that way, and break it down. And plenty of people have changed my mind on things where I'm like, damn, I never really looked at it like that. Yep, that opinion right there is worth me jumping my opinion now. And I'll tip of the cap.
Everyone's different, Paul. Everyone's got their own journey.
Yep.
Doesn't happen right at once for everybody. Took me 9 years to kind of fully jump into the faith. So it just happens.
Tim's probably the most mature guy on this chat right now. And we're trying to like big dog him, being like, Tim.
Oh, by far.
Tim, when I used to go to school, I used to hike uphill both ways in snowstorm.
Oh, Tim. Tim's the man. Tim, you got a question? Tim's always got a question.
I mean, you guys, I had like 50 questions, but you guys have had a
different
conversation.
I'll rifle them off quick. I ramble on so much. To any of your listeners who are like, this guy's a f-ing idiot.
No. I like the talk that we just had more than Tim. Tim's kind of, he parlays to the fans. He gives them what they want.
What they want. We were getting a little deep there. We were just talking life stuff. We're on our feelings right now, considering what's been going on.
I don't care about your hockey career. I really don't. And you don't care about my hockey career. I want to talk to you. So that's where I'm at.
Why do I already know about your hockey career? We had you on the podcast. Tim, fire away. Let's go. Hockey questions, baby.
All right, we'll do some rapid fire here.
Let's go.
Who was one player you always wanted to fight but never answered the call?
I can't think of one person that I wanted to fight that bad who didn't want to answer the bell. I guess I could answer Sean Avery when he was in the AHL. He had just came back, and I believe that he had to do a conditioning stint for the Hartford Wolfpack, and that was after the whole Dallas thing had happened. And I was, you know, I was establishing myself at that point in time as a potential NHL fighter. Like, man, I wouldn't have considered myself a heavyweight, but I was doing it 30 times back-to-back years in the American League against the Sugdens, the Morastis, the Yablonskis. And I could, you know, I think I had 11 goals 1 year, maybe 9. So Sean Avery was coming to town, and, you know, that was a big deal. And I said something in the paper in warmups. He was at the red line. He's like, why are you talking about me? And he was just being his arrogant self. Listen, I like Sean. We talk very often. I think he is such a whack show, but I really embrace his personality. I can understand why people hate his guts. I said, let's go. And he said, and then he basically said, if you fight Sugden, then I'll consider it. And he sacked Sugden on me, and I bucked up. I fought Sugden, and he, you know, he bambied me, but, you know, it was just, I handled my business. I was like, you know, screw you. So I was a little pissed that he didn't fight me at that point in time.
Oh, he didn't answer the bell after that.
No, he's, you know, he wasn't going to deal. At that point in time, I was an AHL pigeon. This guy probably had 16 sheets in the bank. I wouldn't have been fighting me either, especially if I was his size. So that was a little story about then, but Sugden was a beast. Did you ever fight him?
No, never, never. I didn't fight much in the A at all, really.
Man, I got worked in the American Hockey League. Like Jeremy Oblonsky twice in one game. You know, one of those beatings where it like hurts to put on your helmet for like a week.
That you know what? People, I don't know what it was. No one ever asked me to fight. And I wasn't looking for it in the A. Like if someone fought, like My first fight, I fought DJ King, and I did pretty well.
Oh, man, that guy.
And I think word got around where, like, okay, just give him some space. And it's not like I was asking everybody and their brother.
DJ King was the guy where any given night, if he fought, there was a chance that he ended a guy's career.
Yeah, he was scary.
He punched to the back of your head, like where the fist was coming out on the other side. I will say, I never stood in there like some of these guys do, like Josh Gratton. I wasn't one of those guys. And if anything, I would probably say a lot of traditional hockey fans who like the hardcore fighting despise me because I did that jersey jab a lot. But yeah. Man, look at the beating my face took with doing that most of my career. Those guys who stood in there, sometimes they got their brains scrambled really bad. And I was fortunate in my career where not too many times, if any, was I laid out flat on the ice. And then that's a scary thing. And some of these guys, I tip my cap to them, especially the guys from the 80s, like the Proberts and the Domies. These guys were really, really punching to hurt themselves.
Paul, was there a moment in your career as you were coming up that you realized you'd have to add fighting to your game in order to carve out a career in the NHL? Was there like a revelation that happened?
No, well, the writing was on the wall. They called me up from the East Coast Hockey League. And, you know, I'd been doing well as a defenseman there. I made the All-Star team back-to-back years. But I think that they basically said, we don't think that you're smart enough as a defenseman and skilled enough to be able to make the NHL as a defenseman. Do you want to try out as a fourth line forward? You're an okay skater. You just got to be responsible on the walls and you're willing to fight. You know, that was a prototypical fourth line fighter role. And once again, I wasn't a plug. You know, I was, they could rely on me to go out there and not be that bad. I wasn't a complete liability. So that's when I basically realized I have to add that to my game and do it full time in order to have a chance at getting to the next level. Because John, and you'll attest to this, it's amazing when you start climbing leagues, and especially when you get to the NHL, the high-end skill guys, it's insane how good these guys are. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, your job as a fourth-line guy, I've said it many times, is to not get a minus and maybe chip in a plus once every five games. That's your job.
If I got there's a couple times where you get caught out there against world-class players. Like I think one time in Chicago, we got caught D-zone draw against Taves, Kane, and I forget who guy was. And they were just – it was like they were swarming. There were swarming sharks coming out for that face-off. And I already had the chopstick dance going. So I was about 35, 40 seconds already on the ice. And I didn't have stamina back then because I would get 2-3 shifts a period. And, John, you know, you lose your – the minute you start going fast and up to NHL speed, your legs start tiring out quick. So these guys, like, they just were buzzing in our end. And they were, like, 3 moves ahead before I'm like, like – I'm just like, I need to get off the ice. And we didn't get scored on. We didn't get scored on. Because I think Smitty did like Cirque du Soleil. He was on like a wiring act doing all these backflip saves. That was a year that Smitty went on that crazy run where he was the best goalie on the planet, at least
I thought. He's such a good goalie. And he's big. He's like 6'5", so flexible. There's nothing worse than icing the puck. You look at your coach and he's shaking his head. He's like, what are you doing? You can't change. And you see the top line to skate now.
And I believe they changed the rule where you couldn't call the timeout. And
yeah.
And whoever made that rule, cool. You know that scene in what's the scene with not Happy Gilmore? They go to school. Billy Madison. I'm going to be the guy putting on my lipstick and writing that guy's name on it because he's getting it.
It's a good rule. It's a really good rule, though, because when you get hemmed in there and you ice it, I've had times where I've iced it 3 or 4 times, and it's like just to get a breather. Someone breaks their stick on the draw on purpose.
They made that rule, and they were thinking, oh, man, imagine the fourth line cut out there and you can't call a timeout. Yeah, that's like 1 goal a game. Yeah, let's put that rule in there.
It's terrible because, yeah, there is a difference between fourth line and first line. It's just it's terrible.
Yeah, you don't want to get caught out there. But I will say, since the NHL has progressed, I would say the difference between fourth liners now is a lot – there's a lot less of a gap.
Oh, for sure.
Because now it's like you have to – requirement is you have to be a good skater, as we were mentioning before. So I don't know. I don't know how many old school hockey fans listen to your podcast, but it does definitely take another element out of the game that some fans did enjoy.
I say all fans enjoyed. Yeah, all around. Like, who doesn't love a big guy lumbering around, getting up and down on the forecheck? It's just a fun thing to watch. I don't know.
I think it's gotten to a perfect place, Tim. I'll let you ask another question. I'm sorry.
One more, Tim. This is getting long.
Last question. I guess, do you remember, like, a kind of wow factor moment in early in your career? Like, I can't believe I'm on the same ice as Jágr or Lidström or someone like that. Did you ever have, like, a moment like that?
I mean, I came up with Crosby and Malkin. So yeah. Just even being in the same presence as them is wild. I tell the story on our podcast. I don't know how many of your listeners have heard this one. We were at training camp. I believe it was the year I ended up making the team. It was the year after that I'd played half the season. Okay. So we were in training camp, and that was the year I ended up getting picked up off waivers by Arizona. And based off all the bonuses that Evgeny Malkin had hit, he was going to get a massive check. Okay. I didn't really know much about contracts back then. So we're riding the bike beside each other before we're going out for one of these scrimmage practices. And Frank Bonomo, or one of the people in PR, ended up dropping off an envelope. And, you know, I was close enough with him where I could be like, you know, Gino, what's in the envelope? So he like looked, and then he like slid it over, and I looked in it, and it was just under $1 million. Just that he'd hit all of his bonuses and stuff. Did he end up winning the Conn Smythe that year too?
Probably.
Yeah.
He went off, I believe, and that was part of the bonus as well. So he'd hit so many of these things that he got a check for just under $1 million, and I was riding right next to him. So that was kind of a like, oh my God, this guy is going to make a boatload of money playing this game. He'll be probably well over $100 million when he's done. So that was a cool moment. Nicklas Lidström on the ice when I was in warm-up against Detroit once I had started Twitter. He just was like, hey, love your Twitter, man, and like tapped me on the shin pads. And I'm like, what?
That's
Nick
funny.
Lidström tapping me on the shin pads. And I believe the night before was Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I think it was the first time that they were going to face off against each other. And, you know, them being from
Swedish,
Sweden.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Oliver probably looked up to him his whole life. And I don't think at that point in time Oliver had my number because he was up and down. But it might have even been the next year. It was his first year. And I texted him pretending in Swedish because I used Google Translate to ask him out for dinner and then blew him off.
No.
Yeah. Terrible. I think that he kind of knew what was going on because he ended up texting one of the guys like, hey, is this one of the guy's numbers? And some guy was like, oh, yeah, it's Biz's.
It's an Arizona number.
No, it was a Washington, Pennsylvania number.
So, oh, that's so anyway, funny.
But, so the Lidström one was very cool. But, yeah, just being around it and the fact that it's even gotten to where that I get to interact with these guys on a daily basis. I'm a hockey fan. First and foremost, and I'm just the average Joe from Welland, Ontario that ended up making it to the NHL. And, you know, so I'm grateful every day with the way the path has gone. And even early on when it wasn't going the way I thought, and even when at the end of my career I got sent down to the American League, it's like I believe it's true. You're being led down this path, and things do happen for a reason. And I'm grateful for it. Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, Biz, thank you. I was just about to close it out. We really appreciate it, man. Sincere interview. Really, really well thought out. You're just a class act, my man. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, bud.